Chapter 42. Explanations. State funeral attracts world's leaders. Article in The Toad, August 4, 1988. Millions of heartbroken citizens of England and the most important world leaders arrived in Wigan yesterday to pay tribute to President George Formby, who died 2 weeks ago. The funeral cortege was driven on a circuitous route of the Midlands, the streets lined with mourners, eager to bid a final goodbye to England's president of the past 39 years. At the memorial service in Wigan Cathedral, the new Chancellor, Mr. Redmond van der Post, spoke warmly of the great man's contribution to world peace. After the Lancashire Male Voice Choir sang "With My Little Stick of Blackpool Rock," accompanied by 200 ukuleles, the Chancellor invited the Queen of Denmark to sing with him in a duet of "Your Way is My Way," something that might well serve to patch the rift between our respective nations. "It was touch and go for a moment," said Landon, who was sitting by my hospital bed holding my hand. "There was a moment when we really didn't think you'd make it." I gave a wan smile. I had regained consciousness only the day before, and every movement felt like daggers in my head. I looked around. Joffy and Miles and Hamlet were there too. "Hi, guys." They smiled and welcomed me back. "How long?" I asked in a whisper.
2 weeks, said Landon. "We really thought...
I gently squeezed his hand and looked around. Land divined my thoughts perfectly.
"He's with his grandmother."
I raised a hand to touch the side of my head, but could feel only a heavy bandage. Landon took my hand and returned it to the sheet. "What?"
"You were astonishingly lucky," he said in a soothing tone. "The doctors say you'll make a full recovery. The caliber was quite small, and it entered your skull obliquely. By the time it had gone through, most of the energy was gone."
He tapped the side of his head.
"It lodged between your brain and the inside of the skull. Gave us quite a fright, though."
"Cindy died, didn't she?" Joffy answered.
"Looked to be improving, but then septicemia set in."
"They really loved one another, you know, despite their differences."
"She was a hit woman, Thursday, a trained assassin. I don't think she regarded death as anything more than an occupational hazard."
I nodded. He was right. Landon leaned forwards and kissed my nose. "Who shot me, Land?"
"Does the name Norman Johnson mean anything to you?"
"Yes," I said. "The Minotaur. You were right. He'd been trying to slapstick me to death all week. Steamroller, banana skin, piano. I was a fool not to see it. Mind you, a gun's hardly slapstick, is it?"
Landon smiled. "It had a large bang sign that came out of the barrel, as well as the bullet. The police are still trying to make sense of it."
I sighed. The Minotaur was long gone, but I'd still have to be careful. I turned to Landon. There was still something I needed to know. "Did we win?"
"Of course. You pegged a foot closer than O'Farthen's. Your shot has been voted sporting moment of the century. In Swindon, at any rate."
"So we aren't at war with Wales?" Landon shook his head and smiled.
"Cain's finished, my darling, and Goliath has abandoned all attempts to become a religion. St. Zivilcix does indeed work in mysterious ways."
"Are you going to tell me?" I said, with a wan smile. "Or do I have to beat it out of you with a stick?" Joffy unfolded the picture of St. Zivilcix and Cindy's fatal pianoing on Commercial Road, the one from the Swindon Evening Globe that Gran had given me.
"We found this in your back pocket," said Miles. "And it got us to thinking," continued Joffy, "exactly where Zivilcix was heading that morning and why he had the ticket for the gravitube in his bedroom. He was cutting his losses and running. I don't think even Zivilcix, or whoever he was, believed that Swindon could possibly win the Superhoop. Dad had always said that time wasn't immutable."
"I don't get it."
Miles leaned forward and showed me the picture again.
He died trying to get to Tudor Turf Accounting.
So? Oldest betting shop in Swindon?
No, in the world. We made a few calls. It had been trading continually since 1264.
I looked at Joffe quizzically.
What are you saying? That the Book of Revealments was nothing of the kind. It's a 13th century betting slip.
A what? He pulled Zivelkix's Revealments from his pocket and opened it to the front page. There was a countersigned receipt for a farthing that we had thought was a bookbinder's tax or something. The small arithmetical sum next to each revealment was actually the odds against that particular event's coming true, each one countersigned by the same signature as on the front page. Joffe flicked through the slim volume.
The Spanish Armada revealment had been given the odds of 600-1. Wellington's victory at Waterloo, 420-1.
He flicked to the final page.
The outcome of the croquet match was set at 124,000-1. The odds were generous because Zivelkix was betting on things centuries before they happened. Indeed, centuries before croquet was even thought of. No wonder the person who had underwritten the bet felt confident to offer such odds.
Well, I said, don't hold your breath. 124,000 farthings only adds up to...
130 quid, put in Miles.
Right, 130 quid. Nelson's victory would net Zivelkix only, what, 9 bob?
I still didn't quite get it. Thursday, it's a totaliser. Each bet or event that comes true is multiplied by the winnings of the previous event, and any prophecy that didn't come true would have negated the whole deal.
So, how much are the revealments worth? Joffe looked at Miles, who looked at Landon, who grinned and looked at Joffe.
£128 billion.
But Tudor Turf wouldn't have that sort of cash.
Of course not, replied Miles. But the parent company that underwrites Tudor Turf would be legally bound to meet all bets drawn up. And Tudor Turf is owned by Wessex Cash Cow, which is itself owned by Tails You Lose, the wholly owned gaming division of Consolidated Glee, which is owned by...
The Goliath Corporation, I breathed.
Right.
There was a stunned silence. I wanted to jump out of bed and laugh and scream and run around, but that, I knew, would have to be postponed until I was in better health. For now, I just smiled.
So how much of Goliath does the Idolatry Friends of St. Zivelkix actually own? Well, continued Joffe, it doesn't actually own any of it. If you recall, we sold all his wisdom to the Toast Marketing Board. They now own 58% of Goliath. We told them what we wanted, and they wholeheartedly agreed. Goliath has dropped its plans to become a religion and decided to support another political party other than the Whigs. There was something in the deal about a new cathedral to be built, too. We won, Thursday! We won!
Cain's fall, I discovered, had been rapid and humiliating. Once he was without Goliath's backing, and minus his ovinator, Parliament suddenly started wondering why they had been following him so blindly, and those who had supported him turned against him with the same enthusiasm. In less than a week, he realized just what it was to be human. All the vanity and plotting and conniving that worked so well for him when fictional didn't seem to have the same power at all when spoken with a real tongue, and he was removed from office within 3 days of the superhoop. Ernst Strychnine, questioned at length over calls made to Cindy Stoker from his office, decided to save as much of his skin as he could and talked at great length about his former boss. Cain now had to face the biggest array of indictments ever heaped upon a public figure in the history of England. So many, in fact, that it was easier to list the offences he wasn't indicted for, which were working as an unlicensed nanny, and using a car horn in a built-up area during the hours of darkness.
If found guilty on all charges, he was facing more than 900 years in prison.
"I almost feel sorry for him," said Joffy,
who was a lot more forgiving than I.
"Poor Yorick!"
"Yes," replied Hamlet sarcastically. "Alas!"